Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Vrishabhdev's appearance. Is that right? And I believe we're up to text number 10. So I'm going to read. This is the translation. O most worshipful of all, you are the best of all benefactors, and your appearance at saintly King Nabi's sacrificial arena is meant for our benediction. Because you have been seen by us, you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction. Please repeat. O most worshipable of all, you are the best of all benefactors, and your appearance at saintly King Nabi's sacrificial arena is meant for our benediction. Because you have been seen by us, you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction. Purport. Nija Purusha Ikshana Vishaya. In Bhagavad Gita 9:29, Krishna says, Samaham Sarabhuteshu. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal to everyone. In that sense, he has no enemies and no friends. Everyone is enjoying the fruit of reactions of his own work. And the Lord within everyone's heart is observing and giving everyone the desired result. However, just as the devotees are always anxious to see the Supreme Lord satisfied in every way, similarly the Supreme Lord is very anxious to present himself before his devotees. Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 4:8, Paritranaya sarunam vinashaya tridiskritam dharma samsta panarataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. Thus Krishna's appearance is to the deliverance and satisfaction of his devotees. Actually, he does not advent himself simply to kill the demons, but that can be done by his agents. Lord Vishnu's appearance at the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Nabi was just to please the king and his assistants. Otherwise, there was no reason for his being present there. So the text again. O most worshipful of all, you are the best of all benefactors, and your appearance at saintly King Nabi's sacrificial arena is meant for our benediction. Because you have been seen by us, you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tadamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyatya De Satarane. This verse mentions an important point about our free will. That if we want, we can stay in the material world in our material conceptions. Material conception generally means Ichcha Dvesha Samutena Dvanva Mahena Bharata Sarabhutani Samaham Sargayanti Parantapa. That all the living entities, including ourselves, we've been born in the material existence overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. we've come here and we've been given a material body and a subtle, gross material body and a subtle material body. And Krishna says, this is all karshati. We're struggling in material existence. Basically, we're struggling to try to become happy and to avoid those things which make us unhappy, so-called unhappy. All based upon the bodily concept of life. There are certain, when the body is not demanding things from us, or is demanding less things from us, then we say we're happy. And when the body is demanding more things than we can carry out, then we say we're in distress. Actually, we're always in distress. It's just a question of how much distress we're under. Every time the sun rises up in the morning, the body has to adjust itself to the sun. Going from cold to hot, the body has to make an adjustment. And then when the sun goes down, it goes from hot to cold. And then the body has to make another adjustment. So this is all stress. And when the body can't make any adjustment anymore, it's called disease, or lack of ease. And the final lack of ease is called death, when there's no more adjustments that we can make. And then we get another body to do the same thing over again. So this has been given to us, but we should not say that this is Krishna's desire. This is our desire to play in the material world. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva manasi, sarva karmani manasa, sanyasyaste sukhamvasi, naiva dware pare dehi, naiva korvandakarya. When the embodied soul controls his nature and mentally renounces all activities, he lives happily in the city of nine gates, neither working nor causing work to be done. In other words, when our desires are dovetailed with Krishna's desires, then we can live happily in the material world. Why are we happily in the material world? Because when we're fully dovetailed with Krishna's desires, Krishna's activities, no longer will we misidentify ourselves with this material body, and therefore we can live happily in the city, not thinking ourselves with the city, or by becoming overwhelmed by the happiness, so-called pleasant or unpleasant circumstances that accompany this body. Katrivandakarmani, lokasya sri duti prabhu, karma pala samyogam, svabhavas tu pravartate. The embodied soul doesn't create activities, nor does he induce others to act, nor does he create the fruits of activities. All these are enacted by the modes of material nature. So this is a little difficult for our false ego to comprehend that we're not the doer. After all, we think we're doing so many things. But actually, it's just the body's doing these things, and we, as the soul, we're the observer. Of course, we're not the passive observer. We're also the desirer. It is just like watching some movie and rooting for the hero. Or nowadays, maybe the demon. The villain, depends what mode of nature you're in. Or maybe nowadays, it's hard to tell in the movies, it's hard to tell the villains from the heroes. They kind of get mixed up. In any case, just the fact that we're rooting for the hero or the villain means that we've become involved in the movie. We actually can feel some emotions, we may be crying, we may be laughing, because we're involved in the movie. Similarly, because we're involved in this virtual reality called the material existence, therefore we become caught up in it, and we actually believe that this body, our mind, our words, is some kind of hero in some dramatic play or some dramatic scene that's going on in the material world. But actually, we're simply aloof from all this. We're the soul who's become more or less bewildered by such a false identification. Therefore, Krishna says, Narate kasichit papam, na papam sikritim vibhu, agyane navritam jnana, tena muyanti jantava. Nor is the Supreme Spirit assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Of course, if we want to be sinful, Krishna will give us all the intelligence how to be sinful. If we want to steal, Krishna is in the heart of the thief, giving him all good intelligence how to steal. If we want to conserve material, the environment, or I don't know what else is considered pious nowadays. We want to help the suffering penguins or whales somewhere. Therefore, Krishna will give us the intelligence how to make propaganda or do something in that direction. But after all, we're not the doer. We're simply the desire. And Krishna senses our desire just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. And then Krishna arranges the material nature according to what we deserve. And we can more or less tell what we deserve. We just have to have some idea what this body is capable of. Most of us can admit, hopefully, that we can't fly around in this room with our two arms. No matter how sincere we are, even we may go to flight school in L.A., still we won't be able to fly around in this room, at least physically, with our arms. Therefore, we know, to a certain extent, we have limitation. On the other hand, if we want to walk back and forth in the room, that desire will be fulfilled by Krishna, especially if we're chanting japa. So, material life means a combination between what we desire and what we're capable of doing in this present body. Of course, if we really desire something extraordinary, then we have to go to an extraordinary person to teach us how to fulfill extraordinary desires. There may be people who can fly by mystic power, and if we want to find out how to fly by mystic power, we have to go to those persons and learn from them, because ultimately they've learned from Krishna through a line of disciple succession. So ultimately everyone either is dependent upon the Supreme Lord, either within the heart or by his incarnations or representations, to do anything in the material world. In any case, Krishna doesn't want us to be simply desiring things, material things. It is called shravam eva hi kevalam. We should not mistake that not desiring material things doesn't mean that Krishna says, don't do anything. No, he says, do things for me. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanu smaridyujecha vayarpita mano buddhira mame vaishatya samshaya. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me, and at the same time, you should carry on your prescribed duty of fighting with your mind and intelligence fixed on me, and everything engaged in me, you'll obtain to me without any doubt. So Krishna doesn't want us to stop work. He says, Nahi kaschit chenamapi jatu tishtati karmakrit. No one can stop work, even for a moment. But jagnatat kamano netra loko yam karma bandhanai. We should do things to please Krishna. Now this may seem a little strange because we don't even hardly know Krishna. Why would we do anything to please him? But in the same way, we hardly know this body, and yet we're doing everything to please the body. Whatever the body's saying, demanding, without hesitation, generally speaking, most people are trying to satisfy the demands of the body. Although the result may not be so auspicious or even pleasant, one feels more or less obliged. So in that same obligation, we should feel to the Supreme Lord, because we're actually more intimately connected by nature to Krishna than we are to a dead material body. But in order to find out about that, we have to hear about Krishna. We have to hear about Krishna from those who already know about Krishna. And then we have to follow Krishna's instructions, at least out of faith in the beginning, and then hope that Krishna says he's a nice person, he actually wants to see us, he doesn't want us to be in the material world, he doesn't want us to endlessly carry out one demand of the material body after another, or the material mind or in senses. He wants us to change our conception of life, to realize the fact that we're all eternal, that we actually have nothing to worry about except for being in material existence. He wants all these things for us, So if we follow his instructions, then we can see whether he's actually a nice person or not. Or if he's even a person. Or even if he exists or not. In Kali Yuga, the main problem is that we've heard all these crazy conceptions of life, and we become convinced by them to different degrees. Namely, that there is no God. Everything is just going on. Asatyam apratishtam te jagato horanishvaram aparashvaram sambhutyam kemanyakam ahaitukam. That this world is actually unreal. It has no foundation. It has no God in control. It produces sex desire and has no other cause than lust. So lust has become the God of modern society, fulfilling the demands of the senses in so many different ways. Illicit sex, intoxication, eat whatever you feel like it, whatever the tongue demands, try out this, try out that. Just a little thin coating of civilization on top so that we don't eat each other on the street at least. That time, of course, is coming quickly, as we can see in the last 50 years, how people have changed what was considered abominable 50 years ago is considered the norm or more or less required for a normal person to do nowadays. So what to speak of another 50 years? How can we expect whatever is left of civilization, how can we expect that to survive in another 50 years, at least the way things are presently going? In any case, our conception of life can be changed if we change our desires. Shariram yadavapnoti yatschap yukramati shraha krihit vaitani samyati vayoraganda ivashaya. We're carrying our conceptions of life just like the air carries aroma. Actually, the air is always pure, but due to association, sometimes the air appears to smell or have the aroma of a bad aroma. And sometimes, by a certain association, like when the air passes through a rose garden, it appears to smell very sweet. The air is always the same, but due to association, sometimes the air appears to be good, sweet, and sometimes it appears to be foul. Similarly, we ourselves are always the same, but due to association with the modes of nature, sometimes we appear to be good, sometimes bad, and sometimes a combination of those things. But all this can be changed if we hear from the right persons with the right, in the right spirit. The right spirit is that my present existence is not perfect. That now I'm in the bodily concept of life, I should not be in the bodily concept of life. Now I'm in ignorance of my relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I do have an eternal relationship with him. Now that relationship is not as favorable as it could be, but by the process of hearing about the Supreme Lord, chanting about the Supreme Lord, and carrying out his instructions, then that relationship will become more favorable. And ultimately, that relationship will develop into my natural loving relationship with him in service. So that much conception of life we have to have. That now I'm in ignorance, or maybe there's a tinge of passion or some ignorance also, but this is not my normal conception. Therefore, I have to get out of this conception, out of this experience that I'm having, out of this mood, out of these materialistic activities, into something which is positive, which is permanent, which will actually give positive happiness and enlightenment. Unfortunately, there is so much propaganda, and we've been conditioned by it for exactly the opposite. That spiritual life is simply a product of mythology, and that's the only thing that's really practical. The real topics of conversation are all about economics, because if we don't become concerned about economics, our sense gratification may be obstructed. And if our sense gratification is obstructed, then the human form of life is a failure. So these things we have to become aloof from. All this association with people who have the wrong conception of life, and therefore stick to the association with people who are actually endeavoring. Tad buddhiyas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayanaha gacchantnya puna avritim jnana niyaduta kalmashaha. One's faith, one's mind, one's refuge, one's intelligence are all fixed in the Supreme, that one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge, and thus proceeds straight on the path of self-realization. So we have to watch our minds. We have to watch our conceptions of life. We have to watch our determination. We have to watch so many things and see when it's on the path, when it's not on the path. If one is a passenger in a car and the driver is a little crazy, and every so often it goes off the path into the oncoming traffic, then the passenger has a moral obligation to waken up the driver. My dear driver, don't go that way. We're going to crash. Not that, oh, the passenger thinks, yeah, we've been on the road for so long. It's such a straight road. I'm getting bored. Oh, my dear intelligence, why don't you crash into another car? Let's see how that feels like for a while. No one has to be awake where the road is and where we're going. Not that you drive around in a circle perpetually thinking that we're making progress. We're drawing such a nice circle here. Please take a picture and send it to an art museum. And we should know which direction we're going in and whether we're actually on the path. And when the driver is going off the path, we should kindly instruct the driver, please go back on the path so we can get to where we want to go. Therefore, these scriptures, they're sometimes compared to the boat going back, crossing over the existent, material existence, and the captain is the spiritual master who's a representative of the supersoul to tell us how to stay on the journey so eventually we do cross over the ocean material existence and we go to the real destination, namely back to Krishna. And if everyone doesn't like where we're going, they're perfectly, Krishna is giving them all opportunities to stay here in the material world forever, if that's what we want. Krishna doesn't want that. He feels bad about that. That's why he comes, millennium after millennium. Not that Krishna has nothing else to do. Things are going, you know, he needs so many, too many servants of Bloop come to the material world. He's having a hard time cleaning all those Chintamani palaces. He's coming here looking for a few good servants who are willing to do things at a very cheap price, namely a devotional service. No, Krishna has plenty of unlimited servants. Even the Chintamani palaces, they're his servants. He has nothing to worry about. Now, he's coming here just to, because he feels bad, why are these souls suffering in the material world? Therefore, he wants to reveal himself because when he reveals himself, we come under the internal energy, which is full of bliss and full of enlightenment forever. And therefore, we can actually free ourselves from our suffering only in the association with Krishna. So Krishna knows that. Not that he wants to push himself before the soul. Look at me, I'm God, you foolish soul. So bow down, mister. That's not Krishna's mood at all. Krishna is humbler than unlimitedly humble. He's unlimitedly kind and humble and sweet. He feels himself to be the servant of his servants. He doesn't impose himself upon his servants. But he's very happy when the servants surrender to him because then he can show how he's actually a surrendered servant of his servants. We can resume our loving relationship with him again, rather than this antagonistic, competitive, uselessly competing with Krishna, who doesn't want to compete with us because it's a waste of time. In any case, Krishna is very happy to appear before King Nabi. He'll be very happy to appear before any of us. It's just that we have to be happy when Krishna appears before us. Not that here is the old Krishna again. He's the one I've been looking to avoid since time immemorial. Why does he keep on popping up all the time and spoiling my material existence? So that's the main attitude we have to get away from, that why is Krishna causing me so much inconvenience and causing me to feel guilty about trying to enjoy the material world? It's probably one of the reasons when the devotees come, they're in the movement for some time, they become absorbed a little bit in Krishna consciousness, and then they leave, and they can't forget Krishna. He keeps on popping up all the time. And therefore, they have to absorb themselves completely in intoxication and all kinds of sinful activities just to try and forget Krishna, because it becomes difficult. So we shouldn't feel bad if we remember Krishna a little bit more often than we want to. Instead, we should become a little bit more enthusiastic to remember Krishna more and more and give up our material conceptions of life. Not that I came to the Hare Krishna movement, I had so many problems, most of them have gone away, now I can sit back and ride comfortably in the material existence for some time. And when things get tough, the economy goes down too much, or I can't get what I want, then we're back praying to the Lord again, sincerely. Please, my Lord, I have so many problems, and what are you here for? But to solve my problems. And then we have a nice relationship. Material problems, at least. Actually, if we become Krishna conscious, then we won't even know that there was such a thing as material existence. That material existence is simply the product of our lack of our relation with Krishna. Otherwise, there is no material existence. And the more we have a relation with Krishna, then the more we'll find out that there was no such thing as material existence. It was just some mistaken conception of existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Oh, here.
Since we're not the doer, how is it that we can do things to please Krishna? What spiritual value can it have when we're not really doing anything?
Well, we are doing something. We're desiring. In the spiritual world, people just desire to please Krishna, and that produces bliss. Love. Just like when we love someone, then Jagadish Chandra Bose, he did an experiment. He had plants and he had some way of measuring the feelings of the plants, whether positive or negative. And people would walk in with a negative mood and the plants would become very fearful, especially if previously this person had done some harm to the plant. And someone else would walk in who had watered the plant or something in a very positive mood, and the plant would become very joyful. So the feelings we have, the mood we have, the desires we have, this actually is our what we do in the spiritual world. We desire to please Krishna, and it happens. We simply desire that we should make a garland for Krishna, and the garland's made just by the desire. Here we have to do, we desire, and nothing happens. We got to make so many arrangements, have to go through a material body for things to happen. In the spiritual world, we just desire to please Krishna, and it happens. Everything we're desiring happens. So desire is very, that's what's moving the material world is desire, the perverted desire, and that's what goes on in the spiritual world, desire. But it's real desire, loving desire. Here, as it says, Prabhupada said, our desire is conditioned. Material desire is a subtle form of conditioning. Actually, there's no such really thing as a material desire. It's simply a creation of Krishna by his material energy. But when we identify ourselves with those material desires, like lust and anger and greed, then we become implicated in those things. But actually, these things, material desire, has nothing to do with ourselves. We've simply become absorbed in them. But when we get the real desire, the real desire to please Krishna coming through the super succession, that then we'll actually find out that these are my real desires. They're not simply artificial, but conditioned desires. They're the naked soul, so to speak. The pure air without the aromas. Anything else? Yes.
We can't really see the soul with our eyes, vision. We can't see the soul. So how is it that we can develop love for another soul? I mean, you know, we have some idea, some concept. But if we look at a person, it's really, you know, you look at their body. And you know, you were always told, well, you're not that body. So you're not that body, but I'm still trying to understand or to love you, or even myself for that matter.
Well, you can't love anyone if you don't know them.
Yeah. Well, I know you. I mean, in the sense that in our daily activity, I know you.
But love.
But I don't know how, you know, I can't see your soul.
But you can see the soul performing devotional activities of Krishna, and therefore you can remember Krishna. Our real relationship is with Krishna. And when the devotees help us remember Krishna, then we can appreciate how they're helping us serve and love Krishna.
So, so your answer to me then is that we don't really, when you're together with devotees, you don't really look at a devotee. All you're supposed to do is look at Krishna. And if there's a devotee beside you, you don't really care.
But that is Krishna.
A relationship.
But that is, we see with the eyes of knowledge, we'll see it is actually Krishna. Because it's not just the body. It's the soul and the super soul. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chayava Swapakecha, Pandita Samadarshana. So those who are actually learned and humble, they can see with an equal vision the learned and gentle Brahman, the cow, the dog, the elephant, the dog eater. Because they know that within the activities that are being performed by the devotee in association with his spiritual master and the super soul, they're actually Krishna's activities. I'm having a relation with Krishna through this devotee. It's not simply some soul and material energy. It's the soul, material energy, and Krishna. And as I serve the devotee appropriately, as I have that's a loving relation with Krishna.
You haven't convinced me yet, but I understand your point. And I think I knew that, but I'm just trying to get a little bit.
Yeah, we have to study the scriptures. Krishna says there are six loving exchanges, offering gifts and charity, revealing one's mind and offering gifts and charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence and inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and giving prasad. So these are loving exchanges between the devotee, the other devotees, and Krishna. Krishna is there also. It's not just two devotees. It's two devotees and Krishna. It's the rasa dance. It's not just a bunch of devotees dancing. Krishna is also there. But it has to be appropriate. As Prabhupada writes, I think in one of these verses, yes, everyone has a relation with Krishna, but we have to appropriately serve people. The tiger also has Krishna in his heart. But not that we go in and embrace the tiger in the cage or offer obeisances to its paws. You know, Nama Om Vishnu to the tiger. No, we give him some prasadam if we can. But the devotees, so we offer appropriate loving exchanges with the devotees according to their particular circumstances. But the center is the devotee, the material energy, their circumstances, the devotees, and Krishna is there. Krishna has to be there. Krishna means Krishna and all his associates and the internal energy also. So unless Krishna and his associates and the internal energy is there, then it's mundane. But if they're there, then it's spiritual.
Yeah, I was asking those questions because sometimes the tendency is to think if somebody's a little bit weaker, we tend to say, Prabhu, you're not that body. You know, and if someone is, you know, instead of going there and trying to help that individual and pick them up, you know, try to assist them, try to give them encouragement, motivation. The tendency is to think, well, Prabhu, you know, like, you know, move it like you mean it. And if you don't move it like you mean it, then you're not that body. Don't, you know. So I guess what I was trying to get at is that we should develop those six loving exchanges, and we should try to assist each other into going forward in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, especially try to encourage devotees to engage in devotional service, not simply to lament when they lament and get inspired about mundane things when they're inspired about mundane things. Let's see how we can engage each other into Krishna's service. Yes.
Incident in I don't know if it's in which scripture is referred, that one time Mirabai wanted to see one of the six Goswamis, and then he had a trouble or difficulty to actually meet her because she's a woman.
And Prabhupada didn't accept that story.
Anyway, so the story goes that she went back to him and said, actually, I thought that we're all souls. And from that point, actually, he accepted me.
No, Prabhupada didn't accept that.
But you heard about
that. We know that the six Goswamis, even Sanatana Goswami, he go all around the villages. He was the guru of Rupa Goswami. He went all around the villages. And even they asked him about mundane things. He would give them advice about even mundane things. So we never saw it. There's nothing written that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami didn't see ladies. Mm-hmm. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was more strict. He's the acharya, that he didn't see ladies. Generally, they offer obeisances, but not the six Goswamis. They'd ask Sanatana Goswami about common family problems. But because he was so concerned about even the residents in Vrindavan, even what their families were doing, they became very dear to him. Sanatana Goswami became very dear to them. Anyhow, there are so many stories. We should accept what Prabhupada said, what our acharyas say, not what people just concoct. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada.